Very pleased to have here with us today from America, Mukhtar Ali. Mukhtar is an associate professor of Islamic studies at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and he specializes in Sufism, Islamic philosophy, and ethics. His areas of interest include Arabic and Persian literature, Quranic studies, theology, traditional medicine, and comparative religion. He's the author of Philosophical Sufism, An Introduction to the School of Ibn al-Arabi, and The Horizons of Being, The Metaphysics of Ibn Arabi in the Muqaddimat al-Qaisari. And his forthcoming work, Inscriptions of Wisdom, The Sufism of Ibn al-Arabi in the Mirror of Jami, is a study on Ibn al-Arabi's masterpiece, the Fusus al-Hikam, through the lens of Jami's Naqd al-Nusus fi Sharh Naqsh al-Fusus. So the talk is called Divine Necessity of the Comprehensive Being, Unlocking Ibn al-Arabi's Fusus al-Hikam through the Adamic Fast. So Mukhtar's paper explores the pivotal role of the Adamic Fast in unlocking the profound metaphysical framework of Ibn al-Arabi's Fusus al-Hikam. Centering on the concept of the comprehensive being, al-Kaun al-Jami, a term mentioned in the opening paragraph of the Fusus, the Adamic Fast emerges as the key to understanding the divine necessity of human existence as a mirror of God's names and attributes. By elucidating the unique ontological position of Adam as the Khalifa, vice-regent, and the synthesis of all divine manifestations, this study demonstrates how the Adamic Fast provides the interpretive lens through which the overarching unity and wisdom of each Fas of the Fusus al-Hikam can be accessed. Ultimately, the paper argues that Adam represents not only the archetype of perfected humanity, but also the means through which the divine self-disclosure, Tajalli, achieves its fullest realization, making the Adamic Fast the cornerstone for comprehending Ibn al-Arabi's vision of existence. Ladies and gentlemen, Mukhtar Ali.
Thanks. Hello, everyone. And thank you very much. I extend my sincere gratitude to the Warburg Institute and the Ibn Arabi Society for this gracious invitation and for organizing this event dedicated to the study of the legendary Ibn al-Arabi. Now, the title of the talk is The Divine Necessity of the Comprehensive Being, Unlocking Ibn al-Arabi's Fusus al-Hikam Through the Adamic Fas. That's a very dense and complicated title. So the first unlocking we need to do is to unlock this title. What does this mean, divine necessity of the comprehensive being? So there will be three parts to this talk. First, let me summarize what I plan to do in this brief session. The title encapsulates the core metaphysical argument of the Fusus al-Hikam. So fundamentally, we'll be talking about Ibn al-Arabi's book, Fusus al-Hikam. That the existence of the comprehensive being, the main thesis is this, that the comprehensive being or insan, the human being, is not accidental or contingent in the philosophical sense, but a divine necessity rooted in the very nature of God's desire for self-disclosure, self-revelation, or theophany. By foregrounding divine necessity, the title signals that creation, particularly in the form of the perfect human, arises from the essential dynamism of the divine names, which seek manifestation in the mirror of being. The phrase unlocking Ibn al-Arabi's Fusus al-Hikam points to the Adamic Fas, the first chapter on Adam, Prophet Adam, but beyond Prophet Adam, the Adamic reality, the human reality, as the hermeneutical key to the entire work. In other words, if you understand the Adamic fuss, it will open and unlock the rest of the fusus. The main, the essence of it is in that first fuss. And I'll explain what this word fuss means and how we can read the title Fusus al-Hikam. What is fuss? What is Hikam? And each chapter heading, how it is structured, all of it lines up with Ibn Arabi's fundamental worldview and his cosmology. So without comprehending the metaphysical stature of Adam, the architecture of the Fusus remains fragmented. The title also hints at the methodology of the lecture to trace how the Adamic fuss is the first and foundational chapter, providing a lens through which the cascading wisdoms or principles. So now when I say wisdom, I don't mean aphorism or pithy statement, a saying. But here, hikmah, and we'll explain this in a little bit, hikmah is referring to the principle, the divine principle, or the summation of divine knowledge. And how this, the cascading wisdoms or principles of each prophet can be understood, both as differentiated reflections of the divine names and as pathways back to the unity of the Muhammadan reality. And so there is a very important relationship between the first and the last. The first chapter deals with Adam, the Adamic fuss, and the last chapter is the Muhammadan fuss. And the first and the last are echoes and mirrors. Thus, the talk hopes to navigate the intersection of ontology, cosmology, anthropology, and some of the metaphysical frameworks of Ibn Arabi. And now it also draws upon, the talk heavily draws upon, it is in a sense the culmination of many years of my work and research on one of the commentaries, Abdurrahman Jami's commentary on Ibn al-Arabi's short treatise, Naqsh al-Fusus. Now this word Naqsh has a very important implications in mysticism. Naqsh means inscription. It means an engraving or inscription. And what it symbolizes is the essence of a thing. So Ibn al-Arabi wrote the Fusus al-Hikam, and then he decided to write a treatise summarizing it or distilling the main themes or spiritual mysteries of that book. So Naqsh al-Fusus is a short 10-page treatise which distills the essence of the Fusus. And I shy away from the word summary because it's not a summary. It's a distillation. Now, so we're going to look at this in three parts. We're going to first talk about, before we do that, I want to address the theme of this conference, which is Mirrors of the Transcendence. This is very important in the study of the Fusus and the Naqsh al-Fusus. And from the Naqsh and the Fusus, we have a whole commentarial tradition. Some over 120 commentaries have been written on the Fusus itself, which is a testament to its grandeur. It's a testament to the depth and profundity of this text. Let us move to the first. So what is Mirrors of the Transcendence? The first mirror I want to talk about is there are two levels or planes of mirroring I wish to address. And this is like the pre-talk before I get into the real talk, okay? We want to address the theme of the conference and how this talk fits into the larger theme of this conference. What is the mirror? The multi-layered mirroring of Fusus al-Hikam. First and foremost, we want to see that the first mirror is the mirror of the Muhammadan reality. The heart of Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad, as a prophet, the primary mirror of the divine. It's the first mirror that's happening here. And I'll explain why this is important. Because what happens is that Ibn al-Arabi sees the prophet in a dream. And he says, I saw, this is to quote, in the beginning of the Fusus, he has this autobiographical note where he says, I saw the messenger of God in a visitation, in a dream, granted to me during the latter part of the month of Muharram in the year 627. In his hand was a book. He said to me, this is the book for Surah Al-Hikam. Take it and deliver it to the people so they might benefit from it. I replied, obedience is to God and his messenger. It shall be as we are commanded. I thus carried out the wish, purified my intention, and devoted myself wholly to the publishing of this book, exactly as the messenger had prescribed, without any addition or omission. This is very interesting. Because when we say Ibn al-Arabi is the author of the Fusus al-Hikam, actually he's saying he's not the author. It was already in the hand of the Prophet. And this is exactly how he describes it. He didn't say that the meanings of the Fusus came to me. He said in his hand was Fusus al-Hikam. So in other words, and then I've made a comment in my book when I was, and I'll explain to you now, that Ibn al-Arabi is the author of the Fusus in as much as the Prophet is the author of the Quran. Just as he received the Quran intact as divine word, but then it becomes his own, the Muhammadan word. It's a divine word through the conduit of Muhammad. But leaving that, we now look at this particular example where the Fusus is the Muhammadan book mirrored in the heart of Ibn al-Arabi. He doesn't change a single word, a letter of it. As is, he is transmitting it. So from one perspective, we can say, yeah, sure, Ibn al-Arabi is the author of Fusus, but he's also the mirror, the receiver of Fusus. He received Fusus. So he becomes the first, the second mirror of this divine knowledge. Then the Fusus as a text becomes the mirror of his vision. So what does the Gnostic, the Arif want to do? Record the vision exactly as it occurred, as he saw it, verbatim. And there's a lot of nuance here. How did he see the vision? Was it in exactly the wording that he had, that he has written down? Is it the essence of the meaning? Those details are left out. What we do know is that this book is the textual mirror of that vision that he saw, recorded exactly as he claims, exactly as it was prescribed. Then the Naqsh al-Fusus, this is significant because it goes along with this idea of the mirroring. Why did Ibn al-Arabi need to write the Naqsh? He already has the Fusus exactly as it should be. What was there a need to write a small treatise distilling the meanings? And it's funny, when you look at the Naqsh itself, it's more complicated than the Fusus. It doesn't help. I had to refer to so many of the Fusus and so many Fusus commentaries to unpack the Naqsh. The Naqsh is more dense, more difficult. So this idea that it's a summary and a cheat sheet for the Fusus is completely wrong. It is, in fact, a mirror. And it goes back to this mirrors of the transcendent. So the transcendent knowledge of the Fusus received by the Prophet, given to Ibn al-Arabi, it goes into a textual form. Then the Fusus itself, in other words, gives birth or reflects in the mirror of the Naqsh, this treatise, a distillation of the Fusus. And then finally, the human heart is the final mirror where all of these levels are reflected through spiritual realization. Now, I have a little diagram of this same idea. We can see Ibn al-Arabi, the Prophet, is quote-unquote the author of the Fusus. Ibn al-Arabi, the author, which is the main text, which was the body, the main text that we studied. Ibn al-Arabi wrote Naqsh as well. And I wrote summary here just to, you know, it should have been distillation, but that was a very long word for a slide. And then Jami wrote Naqd al-Nusus, the commentary on Naqsh al-Fusus. Okay, not the Fusus. Jami wrote a separate commentary on Fusus al-Hikam. But Naqd al-Nusus, his first prose work, is a summary of, I'm sorry, is a commentary on Naqsh. And he draws from Fusus, he draws from all the commentaries, Punawi, Kashani, and the whole tradition that preceded him. He draws from them and he patches it together and he forms kind of a selection of comments and clarifications on the themes and ideas of Fusus. Now, what is the architecture of the Fusus? What is this book, Fusus al-Hikam? Maybe some of you are familiar with this work, but for those of you who are not, let us now delve into the work itself, and then finally we'll talk about this idea of divine necessity. It's kind of, we need to, it is more of the meditative aspect of the lecture, and we'll meditate on that. But let's talk about the ilmi, the intellectual stuff first. Fas, Fusus al-Hikam, may be explained in the following. Fusus, the plural of fas, sometimes vocalized fus or fis, which refers to the gemstone, the ring stone set in the bezel, the main stone, center stone of a ring. The value of a ring is determined by the central stone, which not only adorns it, but it also bears a seal or imprint, the naqsh, signifying the owner's authentication. Similarly, the fas is likened to the heart of a prophet. Center stone of a ring, its quintessence, the heart of the perfect human or a prophet, upon which is inscribed the quintessential knowledge of the divine principle. Fas has several meanings. It means haqiqa in usage, or in technical terminology of Sufism, it means reality, haqiqa, the innermost reality, the kun, essence, jawhar, the kernel, lub, and the center stone. According to Qaisari, one of the early commentators, Dawud al-Qaisari, the fas of a thing is its quintessence, khilasa, or essence, zubda. The fas of a ring is the element that adorns it, typically bearing the inscription of the owner's name, allowing him to seal his treasure. Thus, the combination of fas with hikmah, fas al-hikmah, and this word, fusus al-hikmah, is a plural of these two words. Fas al-hikmah denotes the epitome or the essence of wisdom. Each chapter of the Fusus al-Hikam is called Fas because it encapsulates the essential reality and divine principle of the prophet who is the subject. For example, the title of every chapter follows this formula. Fas of the Hikmah of X, Adam or Nuh or Suleiman, etc., in the Kalima of Y. So the kalima. Kalima means word. So the first chapter, in other words, the quintessence fas of wisdom, of divinity, ilahiyya, in the principle embodied in the Adamic reality, al-kalimatun adamiyya. And I'll explain what this word kalima means now. So fas al-hikmah can also be understood as the distillation of knowledge, or the exclusive theophany, tajalli, of the forms of knowledge received by the spirit of that prophet or saint. In other words, every prophet is distinguished from another. Every human being is distinguished from another. What makes us different? Not just our physical features, and even those features and those personality differences originate from the various divine names that govern our beings. And so Ibn al-Arabi is looking at the peak, the pinnacle of humanity, which is the prophets, or insan al-kamil, the perfect human. Not only the prophets, because we have, for example, Luqman is featured in Fusus al-Hikam. Luqman traditionally is not known as a prophet. Or Khalid is not considered a prophet, sort of a half-prophet. And Ilyas or Idris mentioned twice. So it's really the prophetic principle. Insan al-Kamil, not only the prophet. So this knowledge that they receive accords with the divine name or names that govern their reality and concord with their individual receptivity. Qaisari writes, the fossil of every wisdom is taken to mean the quintessence, referring to the epitome of knowledge received by that prophet's spirit. It is determined by the divine name that governs each prophet. So it effuses upon the spirit of that prophet in accordance with their capacity and receptivity. And the Shaykh Ibn al-Arabi says, the fasl of each wisdom is the kalima, the word, to which that wisdom is attributed. Now here, kalima, is a word that's used in the Quran to describe Isa alayhi salam. God describes Jesus as the kalima, as a word of God. So kalima has several meanings. And it also does refer to the individual prophet or insan al-kamil, like the word logos. And they're called words because they originate from the breath, like kalimat, breath of the merciful, as we heard in the previous talk about the divine breath produces words. And so these kalimat, we're all words. Everything is a word of God. But these kalimat, these words that Ibn al-Arabi is talking about are the most perfect and pristine, the most complete words, the total words, the words that summarize reality, encompass all levels and planes of existence. There are entities that emanate from the breath of the merciful, Nafas al-Rahmani. And he writes, know that the existent beings are the words of God, which do not cease. God says with respect to Jesus, his word, which he cast into Mary. So Isa is referred to as the word. And every prophet and every insan al-kamil is referred to as the word. Now, are we also words? Yes, but not in the sense that Ibn al-Arabi is referring to. He's referring to kalima when some existent thing, being, becomes perfected. Then it's called a kalima. So yes, in a general sense, everything is a word of God. But in the mystical sense, in the way that he's using it in the fasuls, he's not saying it in kind of like all things are words of God, but he's saying specifically when it refers to insan, someone becomes a kalima when they become perfected. That's when they become a kalima. So we say that the existent things are the words of God, and words are customarily known through breaths, through the breath and arrangement of letters, and the one who articulates them. Kashani, another commentator of the Fusus, defines kalima as the reality, quiddity, permanent archetype, or ayn al-thabita, depending on how you translate this term. Ayn al-thabita comes up a lot, or any other individuation of God. The existential words of God then are the heavens and the earth, the sun and the moon, all that exists in creation, according to Kashani. Qaisari adds that the kalima also refers to the spirit because of its manifesting in the breath of the merciful, like the word manifesting in the human breath. In the Fusus, it specifically designates the perfect human who is the subject of each chapter. So this is why they are called al-kalimat tamat, or the complete words. And this is referred to in the Prophet's prayer, I seek refuge in God's complete words. Now, unlocking the fusus al-hikam through the Adamic fas. So this chapter is associated with divinity. Fas hikmatu ilahiyya, ilahi divinity, in kalimat adamiyya. So what does divinity mean here? Divinity represents the most comprehensive ontological plane, symbolized by Ism Allah, the name Allah. Allah is ilah, and it comes and it relates this word ilah uluhiyya, divinity, as opposed to rahmaniyya, mercy. So Allah, call upon Allah or call upon ar-Rahman. So God is saying, call upon either on the plane of divinity, on the comprehensive plane, which encompasses all the divine names, or call upon a specific aspect of God, ar-Rahman, ar-Rahim, the just, the truth, al-Haq, as we've heard previously. Call upon any, ayyuman tad'u, whichever one you call upon, to him belong the most beautiful names. But in the metaphysics, and this is the standard Islamic theology, Allah refers to all of the divine names. Now, this divine name is embodied in Fas Adamiyya. So the whole chapter is talking about how Adam represents this plane of divinity, the comprehensive plane. This supreme name integrates. This divinity represents the most comprehensive ontological level signified by the name Allah. The supreme name integrates all the divine names and attributes into a unity whose existential counterpart is the universal human spirit. This is what Adam is. Talk about Adam. The name Allah integrates all the divine names, the existential counterpart to a universal spirit. So it actually, Adam refers not to Prophet Adam, it refers to Ar-Ruh, Al-Kulli, the universal spirit, Al-Insani, the human spirit, the human reality, which has different names. One of the names is Adam. It's also called the supreme spirit, Ar-Ruh Al-A'zam. Sometimes it's called the first intellect. But that's a little bit later, but in more often than not, it's called the Muhammadan reality or the Adamic reality. And I'll explain later on towards the end of the talk, if I remember, to compare the difference or to relate the Adamic reality with the Muhammadan reality. Both represent this template of humanity. Then we have, for example, statements from the Prophet, hadith, which say, and Ibn Arabi uses these hadith, أَوَّلُ مَا خَلَقَ اللَّهُ نُورِ or نُور Muhammad. So the first thing that God created was, or the light of Muhammad. The first thing that emanated from his being was the light of Muhammad. So in places he's saying that Muhammad, the Muhammadan reality, the Muhammadan light, which just forms a huge part of his cosmology, is this whole idea of the Muhammadan reality. And yet he begins the book with the Adamic reality. Fas Adami. Interesting. But these things are very interrelated, okay? So, Ar-Ruh Al-Kulli Al-Insani, which is the universal human spirit. As the Quran states, I blew into him of my spirit. Surah 15, verse 29. God says, when he's going to create Adam, وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِ. Now, min is not identical with ruhi. Min means there's a separation. So I breathe into him of my spirit. Now, this is interesting because when we say of, it means it's a level of individuation, of ta'ayyun. It's not identical to the spirit in and of itself, like being qua being, spirit in and of itself. But it is the nafkha. So when it releases, it comes out, it has an individuation, then it becomes min ruhi. One small word in the Quran can describe so many metaphysical details and realities. So it's nafakhtu min ruhi. Now, the human being becomes the manifestation of the name Allah. And it is through him the comprehensive name of Allah is known. And this idea of the min is important, as we'll see in a minute, with regards to the mirroring of the divine reality in Adam. Because the thing itself is separate from the image it casts in the mirror. So once it casts an image in the mirror, there are two. It's duality. And we'll speak about that in a minute. So what is meant by the word of Adam is the universal spirit, which is the origin of the human species. Adam is the single soul from which the human species emerge, according to Ibn al-Arabi. And this is Qaysidi is explaining this. Since Adam is the father of humankind, he was the first of its individuals in the external world, and the manifestation of the name Allah in terms of his comprehensive embodiment of the qualities of his perfected progeny, the Shaykh named the chapter after him and elaborated on the specific aspects of his word. This is according to Qaysidi, and why this fuss is called fuss Adamiyya, and it relates to the level of divinity, maqam al-ilahiyya, uluhiyya. So in other words, when we say this, the hikmah ilahiyya is the principle of divinity, the principle of spirit, the principle of rahmah, and so on and so forth, in other other chapters of the fusus. Adam is the first comprehensive mirror of God, reflecting all the divine names articulated in the Quranic account of his creation. When your Lord said to the angels, I am going to place a vicegerent, khilafa is important. This is one of the attributes of Adam. General khilafa, as opposed to specific khilafa that we find in Fas Dawoodi. Dawood was also designated as a khalif in the Quran. But Dawood's khilafa was specific for humankind to establish a kingdom, justice, law and order. Adam did not have that responsibility, but he was also mentioned as khalif. Inni ja'alun fil ardi khalifa, I'm going to create a representative on the earth. And so Ibn al-Arabi says that the difference between the Davidic vicegerency and the Adamic vicegerency is precisely in generality and specificity. In the same way that the Adamic spirit or the ruh al-insani in the Adamic sense differs from the Muhammadan sense. They both refer to the same human soul, except one is with respect to its beginning, its ontological basis, which is Adam, and then its peak, its spiritual perfection in the Muhammadan reality. But we'll talk about that in a minute. Fukuk in Qunawi in the Fukuk says the link between the Adamic word and the presence of divinity. Now, each of the commentators will first and foremost talk about why Ibn al-Arabi mentioned this sifa, this quality, ilahiyya or rahmaniyya and so on. What is the hikmah and why is it associated with that particular prophet? That's the key to the whole chapter. Just like that is the key to each chapter, Fas Adami is the key to the whole Fusus. In other words, Fusus al-Hikam is just about insan. It's spiritual anthropology. The whole book revolves around the human being, not just insan al-Kamil. He's just using insan al-Kamil as a template because he can speak about it in an authoritative way. Because insan al-Kamil has these qualities. Is Khalifa, because not everybody is a Khalifa. Insan al-Kamil is a knower of God, Arif. Insan al-Kamil has perfect morality. Insan al-Kamil is the recipient of divine theophany and so on. So he's speaking about Insan al-Kamil in this way, but it refers to the whole Fusus al-Hikam is really the story of mankind. This is why this work is significant. It's not just cosmology. It's not simply this theorizing Ibn Arabi's metaphysics of the world. It's the story of you. It's the book of your soul. This is why it's important. Just like the Quran, it's a book of your soul. You read it, you realize this is what insan is. Insan has an aspect of Sulaiman. Insan has an aspect of Isa, Hayat and Ruh, spirit and life. Human being has an aspect of all of these things, but this Fas Adami is the way to understand it. So if you understand that the whole book is about insan, it makes sense. Adam, we are the children of Adam. So it makes sense that they would talk about the father first. rather than the son, Muhammad. Muhammad is the son of Adam. Adam is the father, the first of mankind, the template upon which every human being is built, even Muhammad. I'll qualify that statement in a minute. The human spirit refers to the all-encompassing spiritual reality that underlines the entire human species. So Qunawi then says, the link between the Adamic word and the presence of divinity, which is the key to this chapter. This chapter is the key to the Fusuls. The Adamic word is associated with the presence of divinity due to their shared participation in the comprehensive union. Jam, comprehensiveness. Allah encompasses in its meaning. It doesn't just mean God. This is a translation of the term. Allah, uluhiyya, is a maqam, it's a station. It's a reality of God. He's saying that at this plane, God is known in totality. But at the level of mercy, ar-Rahman, God is known through his mercy. So these are two different levels. Just as the divine presence expressed through the name Allah encompasses the individual attributes, their particular properties, and their relational structures, so too is the case with the human being. In his reality and rank, there is no intermediary between him and God. This is important. It's not something to just read over. The human being has a direct link with God, independent of a prophet or any prophets. Such an important theological point. While most think, oh, we must go through the Muhammadan reality, we must go through the prophet. I'm a Christian, I have to go through Jesus. I'm a Muslim, I have to go through Muhammad, and so on and so forth. And we must accept their Sharia and all of that. That's true from one perspective. But from another perspective, the Gnostics and Urufa'at and Ibn Arabi is saying, no, you have a link directly because you are built on the template of comprehensiveness. You share it. And so therefore, there is no intermediary between insan, mankind, human beings, and God. For his reality is that of a comprehensive isthmus, barzakh, that unites the properties of necessity and contingency. Human being is the bridge between the transcendent and the corporeal, the immanent, the material, between the high and the low, between the lofty, the sublime, and the base. And this he goes on in the Fusus, and you'll see this. It's not only that the prophets are seen in the most positive light, but you also see their humanness. And this is what the Quran is dealing with all of these prophets. Musa and Yunus and all of the stories of the prophets are talking, is showing them in a human light. Wasa Adam, and Adam rebelled or he sinned against his Lord and so on and so forth. So a lot of the stories of the Quran concerning the prophets are really looking at their humanity. Now, of course, we have this idea of Adam was created in God's image, in the form of the merciful. This is also a concept in the Bible. So God created mankind in his own image, in the image of God. He created them, male and female. He created them, and so on. Genesis 1:27. And other texts, we have a lot of this. But this idea of image is also very important. It's not something new to Islam or new to, you know, Ibn Arabi. So we found this in ancient text, even in extra, sort of the extra Jewish text, Pseudographia. He says, the Lord said with his own two hands, he created mankind. And we have a hadith on this as well. With his own two hands, he created mankind in a facsimile of his own face, both great and small. In the testament of Isaac. And I mean, there's a lot of evidence for this. So I want to get to the main topic. So now, Adam, the comprehensive mirror of God. We've covered these ideas. God created Adam in his own image. He taught Adam all the names. And this teaching of the names is an ontological instilling. It's the template of his creation. So, to summarize this idea of unlocking the Fusul. So this was the second thing. The first thing was the mirroring idea and the textual reception. Second idea is the unlocking of the Fusus. How do we do it? Adam is the totality, and the other prophets are specificities. That's one point. Fusus describes a process of differentiation within the unified Adamic reality, or the comprehensive reality of God. Without Adam, subsequent prophetic wisdoms remain fragments. So Adam is the synthesis. Adam is the template. It connects to the Muhammadan reality like two arcs of a circle. So this is another thing to read about in the Fusus, is that the arrangement of the chapters is deliberate. The opening chapter illuminates the primordial essence of the Adamic reality, mirroring the final chapter, which symbolizes the culmination of human potential in the Muhammadan reality. These two chapters together form an existential circle. And Ibn Arabi talks about the arc of descent and the arc of ascent. Qawsain, Qaba Qawsain, this word arc is used frequently in the literature, Sufi literature, particularly with Ibn Arabi. And so this is an example, the arc of descent. A descending arc and an ascending arc. The former represents humanity's descent from God into the world, Adam's descent into the world, while the latter signifies humanity's return and ascent back to God, the spiritual ascension. The first chapter also explores the relationship between the essence and the names, the all-inclusive name Allah, and the divine imperative of creation, which is going to be our next topic, the final topic. Now, when we look at two texts, they have very similar, the Naqsh is in the exact same format of the Fusus, 27 chapters on writing on 27 prophetic figures. The Naqsh follows the same sequence. So in a sense, it really is a mirror of that text. And now, before I go on, I want to talk about this idea of divine necessity. What do we mean by this term, divine necessity? It can be understood in this briefly, the intrinsic imperative within the divine essence for self-disclosure. In other words, as we will see in the Fusus and the Naqsh, which has a very similar idea, it is that God wished to see himself in a form other than his own self, in the form of a mirror. Just like you want to see, you know yourself, but you also want to see yourself in a mirror. You have an intrinsic knowledge of yourself. You know you exist, you think, you know you're alive, but you still want to see yourself in the mirror. And every time you put on something new, clothing, new jacket, whatever, you want to see what that looks like on you. You want to see this angle and that angle. You want to see the whole outfit, the whole ensemble. So just like we want to see ourselves in different forms and different outfits in variation, God too. In fact, we get it from God himself. This is written in our DNA. The desire for self-manifestation, the desire to reveal yourself, to know yourself, to unfold within. Nobody knows what they're going to become. Nobody knows. You know what you are now, but you don't know what you're going to become, where you're going. You don't know, not tomorrow, not in a year, and not after you die. But you do want to know, yes? Sure you do. Okay? And so does God. God wishes to realize the complete realization of the divine attributes of perfection. See the attributes of perfection in a perfect mirror or the comprehensive being. So this is what divine necessity means. In other words, Allah, وَلَمْ يَكُنْ مَعْهُ شَيْءٍ. This is the origin of all things. God was and nothing was with him. This is from a hadith of the Prophet. Now, this is very important. This is the essence of the talk, is to contemplate on this idea. God was and there was nothing with him. Therefore, there was nothing. There was no existence. There's only this reality, this being. Kana Allah. So, in other words, it was as if it was non-being, except for the existence of Allah, whatever that is, it was non-being. That non-being desired, and I say quote-unquote non-being, it's actually all being, sheer being. So not non-being as a non-existent. It's not nihilism. It's not saying that, oh, it came from nothing. No. Yes, it did come from nothing. Everything came from nothing, yes. Because when it's all things, then it is nothing. Sheer being does not have an identity. It doesn't have a place. It's all things and nothing at the same time. So this is the state of sheer being. Kana Allah. Pure reality. No distinction, no differentiation. And without distinction and differentiation, it is nothingness. But not in the absence, in the fullest sense of the word. So it's a very subtle distinction between sheer being and nothingness. This is why it's transcendent. This is the ultimate principle that the whole of Ibn Arabi's cosmology rests on, this idea right here. كَانَ اللَّهُ وَلَمْ يَكُنْ مَعَهُ شَيْءٍ. God was and nothing was with him. And then this being desired, if you will, wished, or it became necessary. It was necessary for this thing to see the identities of his beautiful names. In other words, God wished to see himself in a mirror. He knew himself, but he says, this knowledge that I have of myself would only be more complete if I see myself in the mirror of myself. So the mirror is also God. It's not something external from the being. And this is the nature. And so now when we start talking about these different levels, the maqam al-ahadiyya, wahidiyya, and all of these different, this hierarchy of being, this is what's happening here. In regular terms, without the jargon of Ibn al-Arabi or the Sufi jargon, is that God wished to see what he was in his own being. So he is the image, he is the thing itself, he is the mirror, and he is the image in the mirror. So the mirror is duality, and the image cast in the mirror is triplicity. So we have three things now. We have self, ipsaity, huwiyya, mirror, and the image in the mirror. So, identities, ayan, you can translate it any way you want. Essences, identities, entities, a very difficult word to translate. Of his beautiful names, which are infinite, perfections of this essence. Or if you will, to behold himself within a comprehensive being, kaunun jami'. In other words, that Adam, or this insan, haqiqa, the reality of insan, is this exact thing, is the mirror of God that embraces the divine order. This is the Fusus al-Hikam, the first line, the first sentence of Fusus is this. He begins the whole book with this. So that the mystery might be revealed to himself. For the vision of a thing has of itself, through itself, is not the same as the vision it has of itself through something else that serves as a mirror. So all of it is self-knowledge. In other words, can we say, this is a philosophical question, can we say that when God was and nothing was with him, that God knew himself? Not exactly. God didn't know himself at that moment. Because knowing is a sifa, is an attribute, the attribute of knowledge. So then you have self and you have knowledge of the self. So if we say God knows himself at the level of the essence, then we're saying actually he knows himself at the level of knowledge, the plane of knowledge, the degree of knowledge. So knowledge is different than self. Like, so for example, sometimes you know things about yourself and sometimes you just are. If you say, what are you thinking about? I don't know. It's not like you're not thinking. It's always working. But you're not consciously, you don't have a thought in your mind. I just am. I'm just resting my mind. I'm just, you know, in this space, you're in a space. So you're not thinking, so you don't have knowledge of yourself at that moment. And similarly, it cannot be said, technically speaking, that God knew himself at the level of Kana Allah. Sheer being does not have any orientation. It just is. And this is why knowledge came to be, because he wanted to know himself, to behold himself, to see himself, to hear himself. All of these attributes came to play at the level of the differentiation and mirroring, not at the level of essence. At the level of the essence, even God doesn't know himself. And that's not a deficiency on his part. It's the nature of things. By definition, he doesn't know himself. It's not a matter of deficiency, because we see, oh, only knowledge is good and ignorance. He wasn't ignorant. There's no concept of knowledge. It doesn't exist. Knowledge is differentiation. Now, in the Naqsh al-Fusus, which we said serves as a mirror for the Fusus, Ibn al-Arabi says something slightly different. And it's significant. Everything he's doing is volitional. Everything he's doing is by some kind of mystic intuition. It's not some textual analysis, a vision. It's visionary knowledge. It's divine knowledge. To know that the most beautiful names, by their very essences, seek the existence of the world. So now, he's not talking about in the level of the mirror. He said, Naqsh is the mirror. On the plane of the mirror, he's not saying God wished to know himself in the mirror. He says, now the names wish to know themselves. So the Naqsh starts slightly differently from the Fusus itself. It's a subtle point. If you read them side by side and you study them side by side, you kind of grasp the subtlety, the nuance here. So it's the names now, which are now the image in the mirror has already been reflected. Now the names want to know themselves. The perfections want to know themselves. God knows himself through what? Through the names. The names know themselves through what? Through creation. Through their objects. Now they seek the existence of the world. God thus engendered the world as a harmoniously fashioned body. So he's going straight into the body element of the world. You're saying the world is a body. Insan is a body. The human being also has a body. And the whole world. And made Adam its spirit. By Adam, I mean the existence of the human world. So, the vision of God of himself through something else refers initially to the mode of divine self-perception. A reality in which he beholds himself reflectively. This is the first individuation, the first instance of duality, through which Adam, the Adamic spirit, emerges. For otherwise God was and nothing was with him, according to the Hadith. Now the Adamic spirit thus represents the first image in the divine mirror or the mirror itself, depending on how you want to read it, revealing the totality of the divine order, known as the Supreme Spirit, the great human, Adam, the Muhammadan spirit, and so on. And thank you very much. This concludes. If there, we can talk more about these the subtleties and nuances in the question and answer session, but I think we'll conclude the talk there.